No, that's all right.
Do you need a chair?
No, I don't need a chair. I'm getting undressed while we speak. You were getting the intimate interview with
Kaka. It's perfect.
So is the, was the Ugly Betty, what was that about? The Ugly Betty routine?
Well, I had done, I had my last one-person show. I had done a little story that I then repeated on a logo special.
What story?
About riding the train in drag and this guy calling me a name and then confronting him and humiliating him in front of the rest of the passengers. And then the passengers breaking into applause for me. And essentially that was a scene very similar that appeared on Ugly Betty, and then, you know, that's what happened. People were saying either, did you see Ugly Betty? They stole that from you, or they turned around and said.
Did you try and do anything about it?
Oh,
did you contact them?
No. I called a friend that works on the show and, you know, said, please, in the future, if you hear anything that sounds familiar, you know.
Step in,
because, you know, this is how I make my living, and when my scenes are stolen, I can't compete with a hit ABC show, you know. People are going to think I stole it from them.
Yeah.
So it's...
And that did happen.
And that's happened 4 times to me with different things.
How do you handle that?
Well, I get depressed and think awful thoughts. But then you just have to, you know, let it go, really.
Mm. Your show seems very...
And basically, in the past, I would think, well, maybe it was just a coincidence, or maybe... I shouldn't be so egotistical to think that people would actually steal my writing, you know.
Sure.
They're professionals working on television. But after this time, I just thought, nah, you know what? It's an ugly business sometimes, and that stuff does happen. And I'm going to talk about it in my show.
Sure.
And my friend that writes for the show, 2 friends that work on that show, said, you should talk about it in your next show. So I sort of felt like I had their blessing as well. Hmm. And they acknowledged that.
Is it difficult?
There is a guy on that show that probably knows, that is known to lift other people's material.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
Wow. Is it difficult doing such a personal show?
Well, I've been doing that sort of thing for years now.
Sure.
And, yeah, I guess you do feel vulnerable. You want an audience to get what you're trying to do, and if it doesn't go right some days and whatnot.
Do you want to turn away or anything?
No, it's fine. It's, you know, it's embarrassing. It, you know, you take it personally because it's your writing, it's about your life.
Yeah.
What fascinates me is that people get really into it, and the stuff about Raphael, they will applaud and whatnot. But then afterwards, when they stick around, I'll introduce them to Raphael. They say, he really exists? You know, it does fascinate me that people sometimes think that all of these autobiographical stories are just made up.
Sure.
So, I always, you know, tell people, no, it's all true.
Where do you think that drag as a performance art is going right now?
I don't know. I don't give that much thought. What I do give thought to is, like I say in my show, there's a huge community of drag performers out there that are really very funny and brilliant and
RuPaul mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
I had actually asked him about it, and he had said, you know, L.A. seems to be, in New York, it's just dead, and no one even seems to care. And in L.A., he's like, there's clubs, there seems to be a scene.
Really? Well, I've never been much of in the scene, because I do a one-person show. And
it's a character for you.
Yeah, and, well, I'm in the scene a bit in L.A. There was a club called Dragstrip, and, you know, but definitely when RuPaul came out, that was a wave of drag that I sort of got to ride for a little bit. With Tu Wong Fu and my show had just started. They were just, I got like mainstream press. It was easy to get because they were
curious.
I was talking about this last night that I really believed that when these gay stations started, they would really embrace drag.
And but they haven't.
I don't think they have to the extent that they should be. And I think that even in the gay community, there is still this sort of weird thinking that, you know, drag is something that is still underground, or that's where it belongs, or it's not taken seriously as a, as an art.
Do you think that the gay community has embraced an effort to be mainstream, sort of the Abercrombie and Fitch ideal, as opposed to embracing its uniqueness?
I think that that happens. In fact, a friend of mine was cast in a photo shoot for one of the gay networks, and they said, we want it to be, you know, we want real people, we want real people. And that's what he gave them, and then they turned to him and said, oh, this is too real. And most of the people in the photo were young. You really couldn't tell whether or not they were gay.
Yeah.
And there were no drag queens in it. So I thought, that's a shame.
Where do you think that's heading? Where do you think that that's taking the community?
I don't know. I just think, you know, Girls Will Be Girls was a great, fun, ridiculous, campy movie. It could have been art, absolutely fabulous, and then no one wanted to touch it because I think they're trying to appeal to middle America, and, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that that creates creativity. I think they're playing to make money.
Yeah.
And then, of course, things get watered down and boring, and I think in the end, they lose anyway in the long run.
Has the Iraq War affected you at all in your art?
The what?
The Iraq War? Any of the stuff with going on in the war?
I think it affects me emotionally and personally.
Because you have a very socially conscious act.
Yeah. I don't get too much into it, except in this act, I address things about the nature of male energy and sort of where it's gotten us.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't such a great place. And that we need a good dose of the female energy. And who better but a drag queen to balance the world? You know, that's sort of the theme of the show.
What are some of the issues
and, you know, I feel like, in a way, there's the truth to that in what I'm trying to do, as ridiculous as it sounds.
No, I didn't think sounded ridiculous at all. I thought you made a very...
But you sat here and saw the show.
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't going to come see the show. Because, oh, drag is silly. Or a lot of people say to me, I don't really like drag, but, you know, they'll come see their show because their friend brought them, and they'll say, but I liked you. And it's like, there's this whole... And even when I was dating, I mean, as soon as people... Yeah, I had to, like, keep drag. Like, don't tell anybody that I do drag.
Keep it in the closet.
Because, you know, even gay men don't want to date a drag queen. I mean, that was my experience. That there was this sort of shame around it.
Yeah. What are you had mentioned? You did a really great. The way that you expressed it with littering was really brilliant, I thought. And at first, I was about ready to sigh and be like, "Oh, is that really the big thing?" But you brought it back around and you made it into a much larger vignette of really what the root of the problem was, and I had a lot of appreciation for that. What are some of the issues that you see going on right now that are bigger than littering, but that affect you, just politically, culturally?
Oh God. Politically? Huh. Well, with the fact that I got married in Spain,
mm-hmm.
was an amazing experience, and the fact that people were excited for Raphael and I, and
in Spain,
mm-hmm. Well, my family, of course, here was excited for me and my friends. But I mean, when we went to order our cake in this small little town, the women there were excited for us, and it just seemed like Spain was somehow moving way, way ahead with this forward
shocking,
thinking,
yeah.
And our country is just falling behind, and it's almost like chic now in Spain for straight people to have gay friends, and everyone we told about our wedding was, it wasn't even like an issue. It was like they, in fact, it was more that they were excited for us. And I never thought about getting married, and I didn't know how I was even going to react to it, like as it was happening.
Yeah.
And it was really beautiful and moving, and we decided we were going to have a ceremony here. And we decided not to, because we didn't want to have a ceremony here until it was
legal,
and what we experienced in Spain.
Yeah.
I felt like my country doesn't deserve, in some way it became like that my country doesn't deserve for me to even try and create that experience until they're ready to really give me that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have the joy that we felt that day with Rafael's family there.
You know, a lot of people probably see you on television or in movies, and they think that you've really made it, that you've become very successful. It's the image that, you know, being on television gives people, or being in the movies.
Right.
You know, is that true to form? How do you feel that people have that attitude that you really have now come into your own? Earlier in the interview, you're kind of alluding to the idea that, you know, you're being held back to an extent by the community.
I think there's truth to both. I feel there are moments when I think back to when I first started this, and I think of how far I've come, and all the things I've gotten to experience, and the people that I've met, and I get these beautiful emails from people that say that my show meant something to, or that the logo special that I was fortunate enough to do really affected them, or they came out to their parents because of that. And I think, wow, I can't believe that. Like I said, when I was growing up in the Bronx, I would have never imagined that I would be doing what I'm doing. So I have moments of feeling like, I can't believe I've made it this far. And then sometimes I feel like, God, I wish I was doing so much more.
Yeah.
You know.
What happened with the GLAAD Award that you mentioned in your show?
I won the GLAAD Award, and that was...
Or not the the part, I guess it was.
I won a GLAAD Award one year in 2005, and what happened was I was reading a magazine, and it was about this gay theater in L.A., and I've been to see their shows. I did a benefit for them, so I was interested to see what the guy had to say, because I thought he did a good job with the theater. And I thought, at one point, they acknowledged that I had won the GLAAD Award against a show that they had running in that theater, and he wrote something like, when he was quoted as saying they gave it to the drag queen. And I thought, that sounds mean, that doesn't sound right to me. But of course then I thought, well, maybe I'm just imagining, and of course it's in print, he might have said it with a different tone, or...
Yeah.
And I called the guy that runs the theater where I did my show, and he said, no, you're right, because a friend of his had been at a party and the guy was bad-mouthing me. And then I found out from somebody that works at GLAAD that this theater had indeed cut off their relationship with GLAAD because they were so upset that a drag queen would be given that award. And simply because I was a drag queen. They didn't see my show, it had nothing to do with anything except that I was a drag queen. That was what they based their decision on. So,
does it surprise you that at this day and age that there's still a large city?
It's so weird because it does, and then at the same time, you know, it doesn't. I think, oh yeah, that's right. It's like when you leave New York City or you leave Los Angeles and you're gay bashed, and you think, oh, that's right, people still think that way. And it was sort of that way. But even a little more infuriating, because you're dealing with gay people who should know better. And sometimes they don't. So, I mean, for me, drag has been one of the most liberating experiences. I've met such incredible people because of it. So for anybody to reduce that down to just a drag queen is infuriating to me. And I also believe when people say that I shouldn't call myself a drag queen, they need to broaden their concept of what drag is. Yeah. They're thinking that drag is a bad thing, and I don't think that way.
But is it also possible, like Lipsinka doesn't like to be called a drag queen?
Oh yeah, and she has every right. I mean, anybody, you know, they're all labels, and everybody has a right to call it. But
pigeonhole some people.
It does pigeonhole some people. But I've always felt like, God, it was it was a drag queen that first inspired me to do what it is that I do, and I talk about that in my other show. So why shouldn't I celebrate the history of drag rather than have that fear that by calling myself a drag, it's gonna pigeonhole me. It's gonna, you know, it just sounds, when I hear people say that they don't want to be called a drag queen, it just sounds to me like they don't want to.
Like, what's wrong with it?
Like, there's something wrong with it.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to be called.
And
gay.
Why not be out there saying, no, you need to embrace that and broaden people's minds about what drag can be and what it is. I've had moments years ago in New York where I would see performances or drag, and some of it was even bad drag, but I just thought, I'm so happy I'm getting to experience this moment, you know?
Do you know of any excellent drag performers under the age of 30?
Wow, you've really caught me. Yeah, I do.
Can you name them?
No, I don't remember her name. You're embarrassing me. But there's people in LA that I've met, and one in Long Beach that's very funny.
Were you impressed by their shows?
Yeah, or just impressed by even maybe the way they look, or their, just that they're
character,
doing it. Yeah, just that they're doing it, and I think that there's a big community out there. And,
do you think it's withering, drag?
I really don't know, but I've heard other drag queens say yes, that there's this, you know, they went to a gay bar one night and there was football game was on, and it was like, and the guys were really into it, and they were into drinking beer and watching the football game. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but there is this little part of me that thinks...
Who are you fooling?
Not even who you're fooling. I authentically believe there are gay guys that really are into sports, but I just sometimes feel like the history of camp and all of that isn't as valued sometimes. You know, but things come in waves, and it'll come back. And... I have always felt like I just, like I say in my show, I have to do what I have to do and just keep doing it. And I would resent years ago when people would say, so you're riding this wave of drag, and you know, I remember thinking, well, I'll be doing drag, you know, whether or not I'm on the wave or not. It's just something that's a part of my life now.
What is the process that you go through to take something that is hurtful, like they gave it to the drag queen, and turn it into something that's funny as you do it on the stage?
Well, I feel like my early shows where I would address things about my childhood and whatnot, I knew that addressing those humiliating moments from my childhood would be things that other gay people would relate to. And then my mother and my parents were concerned that when I decided to be an openly gay performer and then do it in drag, like, that I wouldn't appeal to anybody but the gay community, and they were worried that I was pigeonholing myself. But I said, you know, I grew up watching straight sitcoms and would laugh and relate to other people's situations, or Carol Burnett playing Eunice was not a gay man, but I could relate to that camp and that being funny, that it was just funny. And the sadness and rage behind that character that she created. And so I felt like I could do that, and I felt like I wanted to show people that even though I'm a gay man and I'm wearing a dress, that they could relate to the universal themes of not fitting in.
Being an outsider. Or
what it feels like to be loved, or any of those things.
But you make them funny. And
was a survival tool for me growing up. I discovered that I was funny, and that I could make people like me if I was funny. So that's how that came about, I think. And then then later in college, I realized I could also make people break through that wall of not liking me if I was funny, and also if I told them funny stories about my life, like where I became a real person and not just, oh, that gay guy that lives down the hallway.
Yeah.
That was a huge sort of experience for me. I remember thinking that when I created Coco, that I wanted to sort of recreate that experience of college, of being around people that were a little nervous of having to be around me, and then wound up, you know, really, really appreciating me.
Yeah. But things so recent, I mean, I think it's easy to take something like from childhood and laugh about it now. But something that's so recent, like, they gave it to the dragon.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, but it seems like that's almost like after all this time, after all that I've done, I must feel like you've proven yourself by this point, that it's just like, why? And to take that and then to make it funny, something that seems like such a fresh wound that is almost salt as well after you've been on TV, you've been in movies, you've done benefits.
But the reason why I talk about it on the show is because I want to point out the ridiculousness of it, and which I think is what drag is, one of the great magical things that drag does do, is points out the ridiculousness of so much in the world.
But how is it easy to make that funny? Something that's so hurtful and so new, recent.
Well, because it's ridiculous. And, you know, this might be awful for some people that might read this, but my mother, I have a sister-in-law that's African-American, and my mother is always fascinated that my sister-in-law, when she gets together with her side of the family, really, really laugh and what you might call carry on. And my mother really honestly asked me one day, why do black people laugh so much? And I thought, boy, that sounds weird, Mom. But I kind of thought, that's a really honest question, and she meant it from a really honest place. So I had a close friend that is black, and I asked her, I said, you know, my mom asked this. What could I tell her? And she just said, I said, why do black people laugh so hard and so much? And she, without blinking her eyes, said, because it's all so ridiculous. Mm. And I just kind of got that. And I think that's like why gay people have a sense of the camp and the funny, because we get how ridiculous life and just how absurd things can be.
Dave Chappelle does a lot of humor around that. And one of the things that he said, it's not even so much of a joke, you know, it's one of those serious moments where he goes from humor to, you know, to making a point.
Right.
So he said, you know, people ask him, why do black people use so much obscenity? And he says, because our lives are obscene.
Right.
You know, we live obscene lives.
Right. That's like so beautiful.
Yeah. You know, that it's just, and it is, it's the same principle.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think my rage is people who might not have the opportunity to rage like that in their homes or in their lives can see my show and sort of watch me rage about the ridiculousness of a situation like that and can relate to it and somehow let out a little bit of their rage by clapping and going, you know, yes, and laughing about it. When you get to sit in a room with other people who have had those experiences and then laugh about it, there is something
you must know, it makes you
healing or you get to release something. And I certainly do, and I've always felt like I get so much from the audience by getting to do this in front of people.
You must know that makes you unique, though, that you don't let that rage fail you, because it does a lot of people. A lot of people take some of the experiences that you've had in life, and they're unable to move beyond them, whereas you kind of take it into this very unique art.
I'm lucky that
makes
that
a lot of people, and you're unique that way, too. There's not a lot of people who are like that.
Yeah, and I'm lucky. I know I'm lucky for that reason.